You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
The Blurred Nerds podcast is proud to be sponsored by Sweatpants and Coffee, the blanket fort of the internet, where comfort rules. Find them on the web at www.sweatpantsandcoffee.com.
You're listening to the Blurred Nerds podcast, part of the ESO Network, brought to you by GVTV and the Geek Ventures. Welcome to the Blurred Nerds podcast, ladies and gentlemen. This is Little Bit.
And this is the Geek Father.
And we have another guest joining us this time.
Please, round of applause.
Please welcome to the show, folks, our friend Laura Evans.
Hi, everyone.
Hello. How are you doing today?
You know what? I'm fantastic. I'm really happy to be here and talk some shop. So thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. I'm going to not ask you too many difficult questions.
Well, good.
I'm kidding.
The last interview I've seen with you, Laura, was from when San Antonio Magazine did a spread piece on you. I'm sure your resume has been updated since then, because that was a few years ago. So why don't you give our listeners a little talk about introducing yourself and what you
do. Yeah, I'm impressed you saw that. So thank you. In short, you know, I costumes are kind of like the big thing for me. It's a visual medium. I love cosplay, and we don't have cosplay without awesome costumes in our film and media. So story we could tell, you know, just by a glance by what someone's wearing, you could say a lot about a person or a character. And so I love that. It was a challenge sometimes in the indie circuit, you know, because budgets and, you know, all that good stuff, but really love what we could say about a character with just what they're wearing. So yeah, that was the primary focus. I did some art directing and a little bit of AD work, which I love too, but just I love filmmaking in general. And yeah, so that's kind of the Clip Notes version.
Yeah, costuming can really make or break a character.
Absolutely. Like
the costuming is really excellent. It really gives that extra dimension to the character, you know, besides the characterization and, you know, their backstory, all that business. Mm-hmm. A good outfit really, it sets it up, because, you know, great outfit is a memorable thing. And that's why people go to conventions and they're exactly. All decked out in their favorite outfits for the characters.
Well, we've all had... Sorry.
Go ahead. I'm so sorry. I'm just excited.
We are too.
We've all had projects we've seen or watched where you can either tell somebody put work into it or you looks like they just went to Party City.
You're like, right. Oh, that looks like ass. What is that, a trash bag? What is it?
One of the last films I did, and I only do it like here and there at this time, you know, I'm back in school trying to get a master's degree. So it's a little bit on the back burner right now for like just being transparent, but I still get my hands dirty when I can. My favorite thing is to distress stuff and make it look old and dirty. Like, I love that. Like, love getting my hands dirty. Love making a character look like they've been through some shit. So, but yeah, one of the last feature films I did was a couple years ago, and you know, it was low budget and it did what it did, but I looked at the IMDb reviews, which was something I shouldn't have done, but like the costumes looked like they were purchased at Walmart. I'm like, yeah, they kind of were. I didn't have money, you know? So, and you take it with a grain of salt because people are going to say what they say. And if it's true, it's true. But you know, that can be challenging to not have the budget to match the vision. And so I encounter that a lot, unfortunately. Sometimes producers and directors get it and they're like, I'm so sorry, we just don't have the money. It's like, cool, like let's see what we can do with what we have, and you get creative. And I really like that collaboration when you're working with an actor who tells you something about the way they're developing that character and that changes your design completely. I love that feeling because you have a performer that's involved and a producer that cares and a director that cares. And maybe you don't have a big budget, but you hit a Goodwill and you find something really weird and bizarre, and you dye it, you texture it, you do all kinds of cool things to make a piece off the rack look like something completely different. And I like that transformation, but didn't always have that understanding. And so I'm kind of on a soapbox right now, like to filmmakers out there, you could do a lot with little to no budget and be creative and give that costume designer that room to do that, because it's visual. And like I said, you don't have cosplay as a whole industry without badass costumes. So let the creativity flow and work with those people. It's not just clothes. It's everything. It really is everything.
It's set and prop design as well. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you know, Star Wars, the original Star Wars, they didn't have any, you know, I guess schematics for what they were building. They just kitbashed a bunch of things, smashed a bunch of stuff together.
They used an ice cream maker.
Yeah. Like Luke's lightsaber is a freaking flashbulb holder, you know. Yeah,
okay, to be fair, that flashbulb holder is like $150.
I know, it is. It's not cheap, but still. It's one of those.
But you don't have to have like a 3D printer, you know, like complex for a razor without the razor attached to it. So, I mean, you could do a lot if you just get creative and like, how can we paint this or like turn it upside down and just give it a new perspective? And voila, we have a sci-fi prop. Like, you could do a lot with little to nothing if you just kind of work with people and just do something random and weird and just repurpose it.
Movie magic. It's an amazing thing.
I love movie magic. Yeah, absolutely. Now,
We remember you from way back. We're going on the way back machine here real quick. I think our first interaction with you was at a convention, and I don't even remember which one it was.
It was probably the first ever Alamo City.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You were
was Wonder Woman?
And Black Canary, yeah.
We interviewed you, and you were just so excited. You were just like a whirling dervish of joy and energy.
I think it was my first con. Yeah, it was my first con ever. So,
really, your first one ever.
It really was, and you know, like I guess it was kind of like discovering cosplay at the time for me because I'd done it for like Halloween. You know, I think my first one ever I was Lara Croft, like the classic with the square boobs and all that. But triangles,
square boobs. Yeah.
I didn't do the triangles, but like that's, you know, like I loved that, and it was just a lot of fun and just kind of like awakening too, because not on purpose, but can live under a rock sometimes and will come out from underneath it and like realize how much pop culture I've missed. And, you know, I love this stuff. So just realizing like, oh my God, like this is huge. It's not just you're the little nerd in your high school group. If you're dressing up and doing this stuff, it's like, no, like this is acceptable now. And I remember being very excited about that. I'm like, I have found my tribe. Like, this is great. You know, and I was a volunteer cosplayer at that event and just running around and like looking at how creative people had been. And my Wonder Woman armor was made with a yoga mat that I didn't need anymore. And so just seeing what people were doing, and it was just really, really cool to see their interpretations and how they had repurposed stuff. And some people could go all out, you know, but just it's for everybody. And I love that feeling, and hope that continues to grow, that everybody can cosplay. You don't have to have a ton of money to do it. Just go have fun and like have a good time. Enjoy other people who are on the same vibe as you are.
Well, I think it was also true for, I mean, a lot of costumers, we don't start out with budgets. We start out with getting parts from thrift stores or garage sales or digging through the things we don't need anymore in our house, or like in my case, going to Harbor Freight and buying, you know, 10 packs of floor mats to make armor out of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's the stuff though. That and a little heat gun and you're done. Like it's awesome.
So, and then we just hopefully get bigger budgets as we learn more techniques.
Absolutely. And as people continue to, like, I don't want to say wake up to it, because people do know. I don't want to pretend like you know, it's some secret that costumes and props and production design in general is important. I think people know that, you know, and I just think it is challenging on the lower budget productions, but it can be done. And I love it when you kind of see that guerrilla filmmaking come out and it's like, shoot, like, that's badass. Look how creative they got. And so I don't know, like I thrive on that chaos of just kind of winging it, you know, and that people have been successful winging it, making something pretty awesome.
Go ahead.
We're just going to be all talking over each other.
We're just all excited to ask questions.
So you actually had a job for a while at a place one of my friends who's a seamstress worked at for a while. So I know what her experience is like, but I'm interested to get yours. So you worked at SeaWorld for a while.
I did.
In their costume department. I think you did the Elmo show and Hello
Look
Scream.
Look at Jen with the research.
I'm impressed. Because like, I'll be honest with you, like the way I see myself is like, I love doing stuff. It's a lot of fun, but like, and this is not self-deprecation. I'm a little nobody, you know, doing indie films because I love it. And so like, I'm impressed. Like, this is cool. So thank you for that. I did. I did work at SeaWorld. The first year I think was in 2015. I only did the summer, but I won't get on the whole soapbox about the animals and all that jazz unless you want me to, but it was just a really cool place to work.
No, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, we all.
I watched Blackfish and was like, I can never go to SeaWorld again.
What? Like, I thought that too when I took the job, and I was a little bit nervous about putting it on my resume. But I did learn a lot from the people there, and there are a lot of rules about what animals can and can't go back into nature based on like government rules. And so I learned a lot. I'm not saying that I'm in 100% agreement with everything there, but I did come to respect what that program does. So I just think their PR didn't handle things correctly. And that's unfortunate, but
I feel the same way when I go to aquariums. It's like, I feel a little, or zoos, but it's like, these animals cannot be put out into the wild.
No, they die.
They'd get torn up.
Yes. They die.
They'd be like, where's my food? You're not bringing it to me? What's going on?
Like, nobody's going to pet me today? Like, what's the ethical responsibility in that part? You know, so yeah, it's a double-edged sword, and there is no, it's just gray area. Like, life is not as black and white as we try to make it. But
absolutely.
I did love the costume shop. It was the first time I'd really been in a theatrical costume environment. And it's very, very different than film. For film, you know, if you were lucky and had a bigger production, you might have some replicas. Like, I did some action films where I did have several, backup costumes in case a stunt double like went through a wall and like tore a hole through the suit, you know? So you did have to have doubles for that. But most of the stuff I worked on is like, you've got one, and if it's messed up, it's messed up. And you have to like write it into the story why there's all of a sudden like a Cheeto stain on the shirt, you know? So it was a whole different ballpark. I mean, it's like a two-story shop. You know, if you've ever been to SeaWorld San Antonio, it's behind the little Nautilus Theater next to the, Atlantis water ride or whatever. It was just eye-opening, and just how large the room was and all the sewing stations and the fabric, and it was heaven, you know. But that first season was mostly just picking up costumes and washing them and doing some maintenance, but it wasn't a whole lot of design. But, I believe in working hard, and that's how you kind of leave your mark. And so a couple years rolled by, and I was still doing the freelance film thing, and I thought to apply again because they had a more permanent position, you know, better pay and all that. So I applied and I got it, and I got to do so much more that second round because I made my name there with that shop. And so I did work at the Elmo thing. I can't remember what that's called, the Bay of Play, where they have all the Sesame Street characters. Yeah, and
Elmo,
I got to tell you, like,
or something like that.
Elmo Rocks, like the different shows and whatnot. So the first time I walked into that space, like, I had the first round, I was like, I don't want to work with any like freaky Muppet puppet things. Like, they freak me out. And so, like, I didn't like Sesame Street as a kid. I don't like puppets. And so I walk in, it's early in the morning, the performers aren't there yet. You know, I have to go like brush Elmo so he looks fluffy that day. And I was supposed to meet somebody there for them to train me, but I was the first to arrive. And so I walk in this building, it's pitch black. I don't know where the light switch is on. So I just start walking down the hallway in the dark. And all these little motion activated lights come on one by one, like in a horror movie as I'm moving down. And there's just like carcasses.
Highlighted a bunch of Muppets or what?
Yeah. And they're just hanging there in these booths, and there's like fan blowers in them to like air them out. Like, the heads are separated on a shelf and their feet are on another shelf. And there's just a hum from all the like air blowers. And I just have like eyeballs from like dozens of these like characters staring down at me humming. And like, it's still half dark in there. And it's kind of creepy. So I my first day with Elmo and friends was a little, I didn't like it. But, you know, it was really kind of cool because you learn how to do the mechanics of how they get their mouths to move, and you're backstage. And I remember one show, like, Cookie Monster's eyeball flew off, so I had to go grab another eyeball and like put it on backstage real quick so the dancer could go back out and do his thing. But it was kind of neat to like, I like hands-on stuff. I like to build things, and so keeping up the maintenance of those things, it was a whole lot I didn't know. And so props to those performers. You know, Texas is hot as hell, and they're out there dancing because that's their passion in a 108 degrees inside suit, and they're out there doing their thing. And so it was just kind of, it was wild, and making repairs on those and washing those is a whole different ballpark. And
so they do wash them.
You do wash them, yeah. But they would, real foul. But you know, like the heads, you can't wash the heads because they have mechanical parts in them. So but yeah, that was pretty cool. And there's always a big Halloween show, and I did that the first year I was there. And then this last time I was costume master for that. So I didn't have full creative control. I did work with a team on who helped like design the costumes and stuff, but you know, you're the one backstage planning quick changes. And, you know, I worked at the Sea Lion show doing quick changes. And that's basically a performer's playing one character in one costume and they come back and you maybe have 30 seconds to get them out of that costume and into a new one. So you have to figure out how to design those costumes with, you know, maybe there's a zipper or Velcro. Like Velcro is not great for costumes because it tears stuff, but you know, like you have to be on point or they're going to miss their cue. And I loved the chaos of a quick change. Cause like when there's pressure, I got diagnosed with ADD last year, like the inattentive type. And like, there's nothing like a little pressure to like get me on my A game. So I love quick changes. Huh? Yeah. It's just like you go or you fail, you know? And I like that pressure in those types of situations. So I love quick changes. And learning how to do those, I was, able to pick up doing, a quick change when Miley Cyrus came through San Antonio, excuse me, to hire local costume people to help, you know, get the day prepped and be backstage and have sewing kits. So if something rips, like you could do a quick patch. And so I got to do quick changes because their quick change person wasn't available or was sick or something like that. So he's like, hey, I've done these. I'm confident I could do this. And so that involved a corset. And if anybody's laced up a corset, you know, that's intense to like get that on and do it correctly. So that was really cool. Like you never know what experience you have right now that's going to lend itself to your future. So if it's something weird, if it's something different, or maybe you're a little scared of it, try it. You know, it might open doors for you in the future. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. If you didn't like it, cool, but at least you know. So like SeaWorld opened a lot of doors. And the last Halloween show I did, there was a magician in that one. And I love magic and just kind of figuring it out. I did see some of the backstage stuff. And I'm not going to tell you how the magic works, but that was really cool. And I made a hat that shot fire out of it, you know, for this magician. And we didn't ask if we could do it because we thought the answer might be no. And there were already pyrotechnics in the show. And you have to spray costumes with stuff so they don't catch on fire. And so I was like, let's just do it. And so at the end of the show, he takes his bow, takes off his hat, and fire shoots out of it. And so like that was really neat to get to collaborate with him. And I later went on, he opened up a local show. Can I plug his venue? Is that okay?
Of course.
Absolutely.
So it's called the Magician's Agency Theater. And I helped set up that venue. And so, like I said, you never know who you're going to meet. So play nice, you know, even if somebody like he is nice, but not everybody in the industry will be, but you never know. And that's part of what I loved about the experience of freelancing is just one connection might pop up in 3 years and now you've got a whole thing. And I helped create that venue. I made the theater curtains and helped set up a protocol. I was the venue manager for a bit and I absolutely loved it. So I don't work at the magic show anymore, but I was there last night and they have guest magicians now. And so there's different stuff rotating through. And if y'all in general, any of the audience likes magic, like go check it out, like support a local business, a local show. It's an intimate space. So you're not, you know, 2000 people in. It's really, really cool. So I highly recommend that. But yes, yeah, SeaWorld opened a lot of really cool doors and learned a lot. And, you know, like I said, theater was a whole different ballpark because for film, sometimes you just, maybe something ripped. So you duct tape the inside. It's just got to get through the next take and then you're good because you've done what you need to do with that costume. With theater, you have to build the stuff to last. And so that was a huge learning experience. I'm like, I can't just wing it with, you know, safety pins and nobody's going to see it. It's like, no, like this has got to make it. And so, you know, I'm not the best seamstress. I'll be the first person to say it, but I learned a lot there. And so it boosted my confidence. And I really respect the people in that shop and just in general, like they do a lot of cool entertainment at that park. And so really thankful for the opportunity. And yeah.
And I think you've also done some work with my friend Rocky, who has the Gumshoe Society.
Yes, I have. I love that show so much. I know they've kind of started doing some new things. And like I said, I've been under a rock for the past year or so.
I don't know how long it's been since you've seen him, but he's also, they've got something special in the works that they're looking at opening in the city, which yes. I can't spoil, but.
I know a little bit. I know a little bit, but that's a lot of fun. And you know, once in a blue moon, if my schedule permitted, I would be one of their performers. And I typically played an Irish lady of the night. I forget what the technical term is right now, but that was fun. And I watched YouTube videos on how to do an Irish accent and had the costume and was like out there on my corner. And I do better with performance stuff if I don't have to memorize a ton of lines, like, you know, ADD again, you know, so it was kind of fun. Like pretending you're in the time period the story is set, and like people have their cell phones out, like that's a, you know, a magic lantern, and put that away, that's witchcraft, and just, you know, what just kind of rolling with
your
it.
Your magic lantern there is a bit of witchcraft. That's dangerous to have that around, Harold.
Make you feel short. For our listeners, basically the Gumshoe Society is a group that locally that they do like some murderer mystery type dinner nights, and I think he's also done like tours through haunted areas in the city with y'all being live actors. And in fact, this weekend they're out in Jesterton, Texas at a haunted hotel for the whole weekend.
Yes.
Which it's I think so they did cool. They did a show there last weekend.
I think they did too. Like the last time I was able to kind of like talk shop with them, they were planning that out that remote location, and they just have cool vision. Like Rocky and Emily are just really good people, and I love what they do and their creativity, and just really, really cool. And I know they're the type of people you just pick up where you left off, and so I deeply respect what they do and how creative that is. Like, I love true crime, so building these murder mysteries on like real events and just kind of having that historical fiction angle on it, like, it's just a lot of fun. And as a performer, like, each night is different because you don't know what the guests are going to ask you, so you just have to know the story and know the other characters, and you don't want to give too much away, but stick with the story. And so improv, like, in that respect, like, I have a lot of fun with it. And because she is a sassy little, you know, she's a sex worker, so I had a little, like, everybody has a fake murder weapon or maybe a real murder weapon. You don't know who the murder is going to be. But, you know, like, I had the hilt of a dagger sticking out of the top of my corset top. And so, you know, people would be like, oh, can I see that? And like, I would squeeze them together and like lean forward and be like, see, all right, like, I need a coin for that. Like, that was a, you know, that wasn't a free sample. And so just kind of like, kind of rolling with it and like making them ask the right question. It's like, you're so close to asking the right thing, but you didn't ask the right thing. Like, come on, like, let's go, and trying to lead them a little bit. And so it's just a lot of fun. And just, I don't know. There's just a lot of cool stuff in San Antonio. And I think people should really be willing to explore what's out there, because there are a lot of really great creators here, and go support them. So
I feel like within the last 20 years, the geek community and the things that you can do as an adult, you know, or a geek in this town, have expanded. Because I know when I was
still
a kid,
we still need more though.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. But I mean, amen. when I was a kid, we need a barcade. Yeah. Well, I mean,
yes.
Being Gen X and moving here back in like the early 80s, I mean, we moved here, it was just nothing. You know, we were like in the boonies. And there was nowhere to go, nothing to do. And, you know, I was introduced to the geek lifestyle really moving across the street from my still best friend. And he's like, hey man, I got Nintendo, want to come over? And I'm like, what's Nintendo? And then it started, and I haven't looked back since. So have you always been like, since like you were a kid, were you always interested in like geek stuff, or has this been a recent development?
So I don't know, like, at the time if I would have called it geek stuff necessarily, but like, I grew up on the 90s animated Batman cartoon.
That's geek stuff.
That is so my jam. Like, I love the Ninja Turtles. My brother had all the cool like action figures, and you know, like, I'm not gonna say like I didn't play with Barbie, but she wanted to hang out with the turtles, you know.
I'll tell you sometime like, about my story with my G.I. Joes and my sister's Barbies, but continue.
I gotta hear that. No, you go ahead.
Oh, well, it's a little okay, we're getting a little blue here. You know, I was looking
blue on this show.
What? No, get the fuck out of here. No, I was a very creative and imaginative child, and I had like pretty much all the G.I. Joes. My sister, being like 4 years older, she had like Barbies, all these Barbies. And my dad was in the army, and so there was a lot of experiences. I was exposed to a lot of military jargon and the lifestyle, watching a lot of military movies. So I knew a lot more about the stuff at like 8, 9 years old than I probably should have. And I was like, my G.I. Joes, after they come back from a mission fighting Cobra, it's a tough mission, man. Somebody got shot, somebody got hurt, whatever. They needed some downtime. So they had some R&R. What do soldiers do when they get R&R, man? They go into town and they go looking to hook up, you know? They go get hammered and go looking to hook up. So I would go in my sister's room and I would like steal her Barbies when she was like at school or something. And I'd take them to my room, and then of course, I'd set them up and they'd be doing, you know, G.I. Joe would smash Barbie. And it was pretty hard. It was cool until my mom came in one day and found my sister's naked Barbies and my G.I. Joe, and they were in compromising positions, and she was just like, Marcellus Lamont Coe. She was at a loss for words. So yeah, I've been a weird kid since forever. I grew up in
I'm not gonna lie, like I've had my Barbies were in precarious scenarios as well, so it's okay.
I think every kids were, really.
I think it's imagination. It's just,
yeah,
creativeness.
I mean, really. I know my Star Wars figures got it on with my She-Ra figures. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, my G.I. Joes were king of the hill until Indiana Jones came along, and he was just like,
"Ooh,
get out of here, buddy!" Indiana Jones on the scene.
I love Indiana Jones so much.
Who doesn't?
He's my
jam.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a whole, like, they recently did, like, a steelbook collection, like, releasing all four of them, so I've got a display of that, like, the giant Funko Pop, and I love, that was, like, those were my movies, you know, growing up, so.
Do you know Indiana Jones's birthday?
You know what, I sure don't, I'm not that.
It's July 1st, 1899.
Well, we gotta celebrate, it's coming up.
I know, right? It's actually close to Harrison Ford's actual birthday.
Yes, that's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty cool,
He's a Cancer like me.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So you grew up. Yeah,
yeah. Sorry.
So you love Indiana Jones. That one too. You love Ninja Turtles. You love Batman. So you are a bona fide geek. I don't know why you don't think you are. That's crazy.
You know what? I think it's because, like, I don't know stuff like his Indiana Jones' birthday. And it's not because I don't like the stuff. And
no, I'm going to say
you can't make that comparison.
Most people are not going to know his birthday.
They call me the Geek Father for a reason. It's because I know things like that. Like, I know the designation of the Millennium Falcon. It's a YT-1300 Corellian freighter. Nice. Yeah. I actually even read the Star Wars, the book. They wrote a book about it. And I have, like, the book and the compendium. Yeah, so don't compare yourself to me. It's I'm on a different level over here. Yeah,
I think too, because you're talking about things being different. I'm an Air Force brat myself, so I mean, we moved a lot as a kid, and yeah, you know, I had my anime phase. So I lived in Guam for a little bit, and that was the first time I was really around a lot of it because there was a lot of tourism from Japan, and so you know, downtown area in Guam, like all 2 feet of it, because Guam is really tiny. You know, like there was a lot of anime and I didn't know what that was. And so, my parents at the time were very, devout is the word I'll use. And so I wasn't allowed to do a lot of that. And like, I talk about Indiana Jones, God, I hope people don't have seen it. Spoiler alert if you haven't, but in the,
they freak out over Temple of Doom or.
Well, Temple of Doom, I didn't watch until I was a teenager because it was too extreme, but I did see, you know, the first one and the third one, and I don't want to talk about Crystal Skull, but
we don't mention that movie on the show.
But like Last Crusade, you know, when the guy drinks from the wrong grail and he starts melting, there was a little sound right before he starts dissolving. And it's like this little twinkle sound, and me and my brother always had to close our eyes. And I don't think my parents realized hearing it, but not seeing it was like far scarier than it actually is. And so there was some of it, and you know, like they were doing their best. I'm not trying to like badmouth my parents, like, you know, they're good people. But there was some of the horror elements that we weren't allowed to watch, but we could watch the rest. And so not seeing it was far scarier when I actually finally saw the special effect. See, and so
I tell people all the time that when I was growing up, my parents were like, listen, we don't have babies. Take them to the movies. They took me to see Alien. I was 4 years old. I know.
Holy shit.
I know. I know. I was afraid of the dark for like a decade after. I was just like, I couldn't go into a room without turning on every light. My mother would be like, why are you turning on all the lights in this house?
I did not see Alien until I was probably 28 years old. Yeah, like some delayed development in like pop culture here, but I had roommates at the time who were also in the film industry, and I was home alone in the house, all the lights off, because how are you going to watch a, you know, a horror movie? And I swear to God, like that alien jumps out at I forget the guy's name, but like they're in the air vents, and like I screamed so loud, like all Captain three dogs Dallas. In the house came running. Dallas, there we go. And that movie gave me nightmares, and I love that it gave me nightmares, you know. So I don't know. And I'm huge on the behind the scenes, and that particular DVD had a lot of commentary for, you know, like the art director was on there, and he was talking about how at the last minute he had to change his entire production design. And so I was like, oh, that's just industry standard. You know, the director has a new vision, like you've got to roll with it. So that's just how it is. And so that kind of reaffirmed that my experiences were not abnormal when things change the last minute, right before you roll. It's like, oh, you gotta do your thing. So
yeah, that's some of the stuff I love. the best about when you really, you really love movies is like when you buy the DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. Immediately, the first thing you do is you watch all the extras and the behind the scenes.
It's the best.
And the deleted scenes. And the making of and the commentary. Like one of my favorite comedies, maybe my favorite comedy of all time, Tropic Thunder. And there's a throwaway line in the movie with Robert Downey Jr. He's playing Lincoln Osiris. First off, Robert Downey Jr. in blackface playing an Australian guy playing a black guy in a Vietnam movie. Only he could pull that off. Because normally I'd be like, blackface, no. But he does it, and it's amazing. He throwaway line, he's just like, I don't drop character until I've done the DVD commentary. And for legit, for real, on the DVD commentary, he is still playing the character. And I was just like, that is the best DVD commentary of all time.
I love that.
He's just a dude dressed as a dude playing another dude.
Yeah, I'm a dude disguised as a dude playing another dude. Yeah,
Oh, that's brilliant.
Never go full retard. I'm just like, oh my God, that's, it's so amazing. I just love stuff like that. Because then you see the magic behind the curtain and you're just like, man, I can't believe that was that and how they did that with that. Like with the new stuff on Disney Plus, you know, with Mandalorian and with the new Obi-Wan series, where, you know, they show you behind the scenes and that volume, that CGI volume, the big set they have, and it's all just like digital screens where they project the background. So, and it looks like it's, when you see it and it's filmed, it looks like it's real. Look like they're really there. And then you see behind the scenes and they're in this big volume set and it's just nothing but CGI screens where they're projecting it. It's amazing what they can do with the technology nowadays. That's what they did.
And that's
on
the new tech, right?
Yeah.
That's new tech for
The
Mandalorian.
It was actually developed for The Mandalorian.
It's so brilliant.
At fucking Lucasfilm, Industrial Light and Magic, dude. They've been doing miracle works for 40 years. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
Okay, before you go on a Star Wars tangent, let's take a moment and take a break. And we'll be right back, folks, right after this.
Helm report.
Sir, there's Klingons on the starboard bow.
Starboard bow?
Starboard bow!
What are they doing there?
They seem to be waiting for the new episode of Earth Station Trek.
Science, what do we know about this Earth Station Trek?
It's a podcast that treks through the history of Star Trek, from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
Navigation, how would one find such a podcast?
By setting coordinates for earthstationtrek.com or by doing a sensor sweep of Spotify, iTunes, or any other quadrant where fine podcasts are available.
Captain, what are we going to do about the Klingons?
We come in peace, Commander. Weapon station, shoot to kill.
Shoot to kill!
Shoot to kill!
The Blurred Nerds podcast is sponsored by Sweatpants and Coffee, where you'll find everything from thought-provoking personal essays, recipes from the Catastrophe Kitchen, themed Spotify playlists, new book reviews, and more. Want to join the coziest corner on the net? Send in your submission today at www.sweatpantsandcoffee.com/write-for-us.
And we're back.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. Once again, we have our friend Laura Evans joining us for this episode. So we're going to get to Jurassic Park in a minute. But before we do that, I want to just get a few questions in. So being that you've garnered a love for costuming, props and all that, what is like your top two favorite costumes you've seen in whether it's movies, TV shows, whatever type of production, not ones you've made, but like ones you've seen where you're like, oh, I wish I was a part of that type of thing or something that gives you inspiration.
Lord of the Rings, pretty much everything in that. I remember being like, they were supposed to wait until I was making movies, but I was in high school, you know, when the first one came out. You know, I remember really being completely wrapped in the production of that. It was just so beautiful, so brilliant. Like I, you know, read the books as a kid and just floored by what they did with Lord of the Rings. So that absolutely, everything about it, how different they, you know, the elves look different and the dwarves and just how much work went into that. They hired people just to make chainmail and, you know, obviously it meant a lot to them, but I remember being upset I wasn't involved somehow when they started making those movies, even though I was, you know, struggling to get through high school, like algebra or whatever.
Well, but, also not in New Zealand.
Right.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Damn it, I'm in America.
But yeah, so Lord of the Rings, just pretty much everything about Lord of the Rings. But I really like the dwarves, especially their costumes. Because like I said, if something's rough and rugged and kind of dirty and aged, like those are new garments and they're making them look like they've been around for 100 years. So I loved pretty much everything about that. I'm trying to think of a more recent example.
It doesn't have to be recent.
Anytime, anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's... This is a good example for me. I'm going to go back to Indiana Jones because that's such an iconic look. And those are just regular clothes. You know what I mean? But
absolutely,
they took something regular. And if you walk into a Halloween party, you see that hat, the leather jacket, all of it. Like,
it's instantly recognizable by just the silhouette.
Even his beige shirt. Yeah. That beige shirt is iconic.
The silhouette, you see the hat, and you see like the whip, and you're like, you automatically know who it is.
You know who it is. Yeah. And that's what I'm talking about. It can be regular stuff, and I need to look into it and do my homework and figure out what the costume designer did for that. If it was just like what was their budget, you know? But it's practical clothing for an archaeologist, even if it's like Hollywood's version of an archaeologist. But you know, it's such an iconic look, and I love that. It's not anything over the top, not anything fantastical. It's just what he's wearing. But and I won't get into depth here, but I love Cruella. I love that she won the Oscar for everything because it was a period piece. It was 60s and all kinds of cool stuff. So that movie was brilliant with its costumes. And then I was so excited when Black Panther's costume designer won too, because that movie just did so much. And I got to see one of those costumes at the Academy Museum in March, and just being up close and seeing the intricate details that we could see a little bit more of that nowadays with these high def TVs and such, but just until you're there looking at it in person, and I wanted to touch it, and of course you can't, but being there in front of a costume that's won an award and just seeing what went into it, and it's brilliant. It's just, I have goosebumps right now thinking about it. So
now speaking of the Academy, you were in attendance at the most recent Academy Awards.
I was. Am I
correct? Now, could you just give us a broad, like, what was that experience like?
You know, I don't, starstruck isn't the word when people ask about that, because I don't think I was starstruck. And you know, for a little context, I was a seat filler. I knew somebody who knew somebody, and they have a very thorough.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
That's all it takes, you know, and just right place, right time. And so starstruck isn't the word, but it was kind of like being in church and an angel shows up, because you're around people that, like, it's just an associate's degree, but I have a degree in film. And so I'm like, I wrote papers about, you know, people in this room. I've written papers and studied their films, and the creative energy in that space was unlike anything I've ever felt in my life. And so, but also kind of being behind the scenes and seeing the production crew move around in between, like during commercial breaks, and just seeing how it all comes together. It was, sobering is not the word I'm looking for here.
Eye-opening
and just awe. Reverence is a really good word for it, because it's not something I ever expected to be able to do in my lifetime. And so
when you're a seat filler, do they just move you from seat to seat, or is at some point like, no, we're going to move you to a backstage area or a holding area, or
a little bit of both? And so he's now my ex-boyfriend, and I won't get into that too deeply because I got to go have this experience, and I'm really thankful for that. But you know, he studied out there in California and knew somebody at the Academy, and that's how we got in, basically. And so you show up, and they treat you to a really nice lunch, and you're waiting beforehand. And, you know, I told him I've been extras on, you know, quote unquote, real productions in the past. And so mind your P's and Q's. Don't try to make buddies with anybody. They're all working. If they want you to be somewhere, do it. It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter if you're in the back. Like, go where they tell you to go, because everybody, you know, not everybody, people are going to try to be in the seat that's seen. They're going to try to be close or try to sit next to a celebrity. Like, don't be that guy. And so, you know, that's what we did. We just kind of minded our P's and Q's. And at one point, one of the, I'm not sure what her role was, but she sat down at our table. She's like, I'm just tired. I was like, I bet, like, you know, like, let me go get you a water. And so I went and did that. And she just kind of chatted about who she was and what she did. We didn't talk about the show or any of that, just chat like human to human. And so when we were lining up to go, and I got to say, like, leading up to the event, it did not feel like I was there until we were about to go on, you know, out to the theater. So it was kind of weird to be like, oh shoot, like I'm at the freaking Oscars. Like, this is crazy. But they were lining us up, and they let us go in pairs, and, you know, no guarantees you're going to stay with the person you showed up with, because you were correct that you do move around a lot, but we were lined up. We were kind of in the back, and I saw that person chatting to somebody else in charge, and she pointed at us, and we got pulled up to the front of the line. And so we were literally in the front two rows in the orchestra section when everything started. And, I hadn't been paying attention to who was going to be introducing stuff or announcing awards or whatnot. And so it's just bizarre because, you know, when you're live, you know, when it's a commercial break, and in between, like if the celebrity that you're occupying their seat shows up, then yeah, you got to go backstage and they'll reposition you when another guest gets up to go what they got to do in between stuff. And they just don't want empty seats. And so it was really cool because I did get to move around the room a lot. And, I didn't know Jason Momoa was going to be part of the thing. He walked out and I was like, shoot, like he's right there, you know, like he's right there. And it was kind of a wild, surreal experience. And so again, not starstruck because I've worked with people, you know, that people know who they are in the past, and they're human beings doing a job, but just, again, just to be in that room with these people whose films I'm in love with, and I love their characters, maybe hate their characters if they've done a good job with the villain, you know? So it was just really, really, it's surreal just to be in the room with all these people. And, you know, at one point we were at the front with two other seat fillers at this table, and I'll have to send y'all pictures just to show you where we were sitting. But, you know, I out of the corner of my eye, I see this flash of pink, and I turn and look, and it's Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher. Like, they're at the table. I'm like, we're at their table now. This is cool. And you're not supposed to talk or engage or try to take selfies because they're there as guests and you don't want to interrupt that. But she was like, hey guys, how's it going? And so we were just chatting with her, like, no big deal. And so that was really, really neat. And then other celebrity guests are starting to come to the table because now we have celebrities next to us. And so, you know, being an arm's length away from Sir Anthony Hopkins, you know, how wild is that? And at one point, gosh, I'm drawing blanks here. But yeah, like it was just really, really cool to be in the room, and like I've made eye contact with Sir Anthony Hopkins, and that's just really cool. So
to your point of like, just, you know, you're interacting and hobnobbing, kind of just elbowing with these famous people, but treating them as just like people. And
exactly.
You know, it's part of them doing their job.
That's why they're going to talk, you know, engage with you, because you're not being a
pain.
I mean, we're nowhere, of course, like that experience. We haven't had that kind of experience, but you know, when we went to conventions and we had our film crew and we would interview people, and we, you know, we're lucky enough to get to interview celebrities, and when we approach them, you just kind of approach them as a person, just like, we just want to ask you a couple questions. You know, we're not going to be like sensational. We're not going to try to get the dirt or anything. We just want to, we're genuinely curious because we're geeks. We enjoy your work. And we, you know, we think you're doing a fantastic job. We just want to, you know, shoot the shit with you as kind of a person for a minute. And usually you approach them that way. They're like, oh yeah, cool. And, you know, we got to meet some really awesome people. I've met Jason Momoa and I had a conversation with him. A conversation with him about who was better, Teal'c or Ronan Dex. He of course thinks Ronan is better. I think Teal'c is better because,
well, and then I've been in the bar with him as my aunts, who had no idea who he was, were hitting on him and buying him drinks, and he's being an absolute flirt back with him, and it was adorable. But I was just so sitting gracious. there like I'm so sorry, Jason, I'm so sorry.
I'm sure he gets
they don't know who you are. They just think you're really attractive.
Just a hot guy at this bar. You're right though. Like, they are people. And, you know, like I said, I certainly didn't engage with anybody. And I did have some, like, I don't want to say encounters because it's not like a talk to them, but like, you're in close proximity with people that you've admired their work and such. And but you know, you don't engage because that's the rules. And so they're not there to, like,
if they speak to you, you can speak back.
Then you can talk. Right. Yeah. You're not going to be like, I'm sorry, they told me I can't talk to you. You know, but
I think the only time I was ever starstruck or just kind of left speechless was backstage at one of the Alamo City Comic Cons, and they had Peter Weller there one year. Peter Weller, graduate of Alamo Heights High School, class of 67, I believe, has a PhD. He's a very intelligent man, but he was RoboCop, you know? And I'm like a huge RoboCop fan, like just from way back. And I was just like, should I talk to him? No, I don't want to talk to him. I don't know, because Peter Weller looks like a scary man because his hair
is, he also, you know, didn't feel well.
He wasn't feeling well. You can tell he like had the flu or something, and he, you know, he's bald now, and he's just this grizzled, you know, in his, you know, late 60s kind of just tough dude. And I'm just like, I'll just leave him alone because I don't want to piss off RoboCop, you know.
Right.
But I was just right there. I'm like, he's right there. You're just in such close proximity. You're just like, wow.
And I think what a life I'm leading. Is like, yeah, because like we know them for their characters and like these amazing stories that they've been part of and built for you and like have been part of your life and your experience. And so it's kind of, you know, like I would equate it to be like being like a kid in elementary school and you see your teacher at a grocery store. It's just kind of weird to like see them.
it's so incongruous. Same space you are.
Yeah, like they're a person. And so I think like, it's kind of humbling to have that experience. And
you exist for real.
Yeah. Yeah, here you are.
Now, do your non-industry friends, you know, like we have them that just, I tell my friends about my, you know, con experiences and my geek experiences, just interviewing Stanley, all that stuff. And they're just like, what was that like? Well, how did you just freak out? Like, you know, no. You're like, no, man, because I was working. It's a job. You're working your job, and you just compartmentalize. And you just kind of stuff it down. And then after when it's all over, then you maybe fall apart and you geek out and be like, oh my God, do you realize who I was next to for like, you know?
Yeah.
You word vomit. And you just kind of like, duh, duh, you lose your mind for a minute.
Or ask you to send you pictures when you're out of function.
Yeah.
Or send them pictures. Like I was, one year I was at DragonCon, I was in the basement of the hotel near where you get your where the drop off is, where you can like get the luggage in and go check in. And John Barrowman and his husband were by me, but I was in a message thread with Celis and Timmy, and I was like, oh, John Barrowman's by me, and they're like, video him, send us a picture. And he was angry because somebody messed up his room, and you know, he's like going off, and I was like, now's nope. Not the time, dude.
No,
that's a negative, good buddy. No pictures now.
there's no way I could even be sly about trying to get a photo or video, but also like he's real mad.
Yeah.
Now
I do not want this wrath directed at me.
Laura, we've on occasion just a couple times, I think we've raised the ire of a celebrity. Not meaning to
once.
But not once, a couple it of happened.
Once.
Okay, it happened well, once. It happened one time.
And it had nothing to do with us
at all. Uh-oh. It was just a misunderstanding. Our cameraman, Timmy Stewart, fantastic cameraman. He's a professional. He's worked at a local news affiliate for like 20 plus years. We were at like a Houston, was it Space City Con?
I mean, we don't need to rehash the story again.
Well, anyway, it was a thing. It happened.
A celebrity got mad. He jumped up and got in her face, but we were nowhere near him.
Right. So it ended up working out.
We have since found out that he's just a dick. So
yeah. Oh. We didn't know this at the time.
No.
And he's a beloved. He plays a beloved character.
We liked him at the time.
Yeah. Now we're just like.
I think that's part of it too. Like, what's a cliche? Like, don't meet your idols or whatever. Like, or your heroes, because I mean, you might meet them at a time when maybe they're not having the best day or whatnot. And they're people too. You know, like I cannot trust it enough. They're people too. And
but sometimes like I remember, people really are just mean. Like I
sometimes
we have since heard that it was not an uncommon occurrence what happened to us.
I mean, sometimes they're people too, and they're having a bad day. Sometimes they're just douches, and they're just that way.
Sometimes they just don't like other people around them who aren't famous.
Yeah, because I mean, I can think of a million scenarios why that might be legitimate. Like maybe they don't want to be pestered. Like, so this is a retail story. I worked at a retail store. I'm not going to name it right now, but so I was late for my shift and running in, and I'm actually sitting in this chair right now because they let me keep it, but running in to clock in, and there's some dude sitting in a chair in this chair with sunglasses on inside. And I remember thinking, oh, who's the asshole wearing sunglasses inside? And so I clock in, and the manager was like, you've got to get out there right now. I was like, oh well, I'm planning on it, you know. And she was like, Tommy Lee Jones. I was like, what? Like, I like his work. Like, what about him? She's like, Tommy Lee Jones is out there. I was like, well, shoot, you know, like, okay. And I was a personal shopper stylist at the time. And so I was like, whoops, I called him what I just called him in my head because he's wearing sunglasses inside. And so I had heard stories from people about, you know, don't ask him about his films or whatever. Like he's trying to shop, right? And so he was there with his daughter, and I gave them, we had two fitting rooms, and one wasn't something we used all the time in the back of the store. So I just set them up in the back and, you know, got her everything she wanted. They were really, really nice to me. And so I didn't acknowledge who he was, and people were starting to realize that he was there. And so kind of like tried to protect them from that because they just want to buy clothes, you know? And so they were there for a long time. I got one of the best commissions I've ever gotten out of a sale, and snuck them through what I called the bowels of the mall to get them out of the mall. And so at the very, very end, I'm loading up their car and he shook my hand. He was like, "Thank you, Miss Evans." I was like, "Thank you, Tommy Lee Jones." And I took off because I was like, I don't want him to get mad for me acknowledging who he is at this point. But, you know, just it was a really cool experience. And I think I hadn't started doing the film work yet. So that was probably my first like celebrity interaction. And it went really well. Like, he was really kind to me. And I think sometimes it's all about the approach. If it's like, "Hey, tell me about what you did for Men in Black," it's like, he doesn't want to talk about that. Or, "I loved you in The Fugitive," you know, like, he's there to shop with his kids. So just let him shop.
Yeah. There's an on and off button for them. Like, you know, when they're at an event or something, it's on and they're expected, they fully expect stuff like that. But like we said, they're shopping, they're out, they're with their family, they're eating dinner, whatever, what regular people like to do.
Yeah. Let them be people.
Yeah, you don't want to be like, "Man, I loved you there. You're so awesome. Can I get a picture?" It's like, dude, I'm trying to eat my steak. Just leave me alone.
Yeah, yeah, it's getting cold. Like, leave me alone.
Yeah, so. All right. Would you like it if I came to your table and started fucking with you and you trying to eat your food?
No. I think the most I've ever said to somebody who that I'm just passing by, like if they're not, you know, at their table for autographs, photos, and we just randomly run into each other public, I'm always just like, "Hey, enjoy your work." And I keep going.
Yeah.
And they're like, "That's all you gotta do. Thanks." And I was like, "I'm not asking you for a photo. I don't need your autograph. You're not on the clock, but you know, we made eye contact. I'm not just gonna sit there and like creepily stare at you. I'm gonna say something."
So. Stare at him like for like 5 minutes. We're like, "Are you a stalker? What's going on? I'm sorry. I couldn't help it." So
I think that's the approach. Like you're honoring their work, and I'm sure they appreciate that too. But you do just enough to like have your interaction, and that's all you need to do sometimes. And if they're like, "Hey, you want a selfie?" Like, yeah, like jump on it. But
well, we like to do our research because we don't want to approach them and ask the same dumb questions they've been asked like a million times before. So you want to come up with something creative and new, and you know, dive deep.
We like to go for deep cuts because it catches them off guard.
Like we ask them questions about like I remember the guy, but he was on like the he was on one of the Marvel shows on Netflix. I think it was what's the one, the girl superpowers?
That doesn't narrow it down. Jessica Jones?
Jessica Jones, yeah. He played one of the characters in Jessica Jones, and I was like, "Yeah, so I heard you grew up on a strawberry farm in Australia, or whatever." He's just like, "How did you know about that?" And it's like, "Wow, you've done your research." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, we try, you know."
That's awesome.
You mentioned Jurassic Park as an inspiration for you.
I think that would be a fitting story to end the show on.
Yeah, Jurassic Park. God, it was the first time I saw behind the scenes for anything. And, you know, like it was kind of coming out of that age where you no longer believe the movies are real. And so, you know, like Indiana Jones isn't a real person. Oh, my God, it's an actor, you know. But so I remember, like, I love that movie so much. I think the special effects still hold up. Like, I can't wait. The new one, I'm not going to lie, I can't wait to see it because I, like, even the bad ones, I love the franchise. Love dinosaurs. Again, like, grew up in a situation where dinosaurs were like unicorns. Like, they're cool, but they aren't real. And then to discover, you know, later on, I'm like, they were real. This is so wild. Like, that'll kind of give you a little bit of a background about things. But I love dinosaurs. I love that film so much. But just seeing, you know, the giant T-Rex animatronic and how they made skin and having to towel dry this gigantic thing in the rain because it was slowing down, like the jaw wasn't moving correctly. And there's somebody in there cleaning it out. And like he got stuck one day and just people running around in velociraptor suits. But it's just it was amazing to me. Like, I don't know. It blew my mind that how much went into it, like the different collaborations and the special effects. And so I wanted to be part of that magic. And so for me, that started off as trying to be an actress when I was like 18, 19. And I got some roles that were okay, but I think I was too young, didn't have enough life experience. I'd like to do it someday for fun, but not trying to make anything out of it. But I would always draw little sketches. And that was how I got my foot in the door. Someone saw my sketches and gave me an opportunity. But Jurassic Park is just like, I love CG. I love how much CG we've come, you know, how much that has advanced over the years. But there's something to practical effects and having a real movie monster in front of you that just can't be beat. And so I'm probably going to watch it now after we wrap up here, but just if y'all haven't seen the behind the scenes for Jurassic Park, it is absolutely mind blowing. And there's a scene where Lex falls through and her velociraptor's trying to get her, and the stunt woman looked up and it's clearly not, you know, Lex's face. And so they had to drop, you know, a CG version of her face over the stunt double. And so just, I had never seen anything like that. And again, getting goosebumps thinking about that feeling, you know, I don't even know how old I was when Jurassic Park came out, but just being mind blown with what goes into it and how cool that is. And the people have those resources and they can make a freaking T-Rex. Like, how cool is that? So
Steven fucking Spielberg, man.
And he was in the room and it was so cool to be in the room with him. So,
well, yeah. Since you mentioned dinosaurs and CGI, there's actually a new multi-part special on Apple TV. Okay. It's about dinosaurs. And the CG in it is phenomenal. Like, I'm just
I
like,
love dinosaurs.
How did they do this? Man, the dinosaurs of my youth, when they their tails would drag the ground and they blah, to the ones they are now, I'm like, I'm jealous of these kids now.
That's so cool.
They get the good dinosaurs.
But you know what? They get the good dinosaurs now because of like the things people did to like get it to that point. So it's kind of cool. The
guys,
to, like,
the guys like Indiana Jones and his buddies.
Yeah, right.
If Jurassic Park hadn't advanced the technology in those type of practical effects the way it did at the time, we wouldn't have these traveling animatronic dinosaurs exhibits or the ones that they put in the museums now. You know, they trailblazed it.
Because they really did.
It captured the public interest. And if it hadn't,
life imitates art, and it imitates life. It's
And how cool is it to like be part of, like, no pun intended here, but like to see the evolution of movie dinosaurs. And you know, like it's really cool to have seen that advance the way it has. And I don't know, like
life finds a way.
Oh, the Goldblum.
And he's back.
Yeah.
So is Sam.
The whole crew is back. Oh, one last ride.
I can't wait. I love Laura Dern so much. I cannot wait to see this film. So
yeah. I'm probably gonna be dumb and it's gonna be full of dinosaurs, but it's gonna be dinosaurs, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
How
and
could
you
know
be
what?
Mad like,
at that?
Yeah. Well, like this is probably really, really dark.
Been waiting for since they started the new movies is to have the whole original cast back. So,
and you know, I hope they give it good closure. You know, a lot of films these days, I kind of feel like they're always setting up the next one. I really do hope, and this is really dark, but like I kind of hope dinosaurs take over the world in this film and like we go extinct. You know, I'm not playing. Like, I think that would be a really cool way because that's kind of what they're talking about in the first one. Is, you know, I don't think you know what you've done here. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And so I'm twisted, and I like it when movies push that boundary a little bit. So
yeah, they could have their own Planet of the Apes ending.
Yeah, dinosaurs eat man, woman inherits the earth. Who knows? But I would like to see them push that limit. But you know, just because it's what I want doesn't mean that's the only way to tell the story. So I can't wait to see what they do with it.
That's nice.
So as we end out here, I know you had a website at some point, but do you still have a place where like people can see your work or keep up with your
career? Know, I do have an Instagram and it's Why So Serious and SEW, Why So Serious. So
I think it's private though.
I probably should change that.
I sent a follow request, but yeah, I'm pretty sure I didn't want to be like, here's her Instagram when it was private.
No, it's all good. I do have a costume Facebook, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't updated much lately, but the Instagram, I'll make that, you know, more public. But I am working on a master's in nutrition, so kind of like exploring food science and what it does, like help people. And it's really cool. Like it's kind of what science will do and like how we can manage symptoms and other health issues. And so that's kind of the path I'm on right now. But like I said, you know, where I can touch in this creative world, and I'll get back to it when I've got this degree. But I feel really pumped right now. I got to go create something. But so the Instagram and I'll get back to the website stuff as life keeps going. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, we certainly appreciate you sitting down for a chat with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
It wasn't too torturous.
It's been a pleasure.
No, this is really cool. And thank you all
so
much.
Come back and visit us when you're big time. Making the
movies. It's been an honor, y'all. I really do appreciate it.
Awesome.
Honor's all ours.
As always, folks, we appreciate all of you listeners out there for taking time out of your day or evening, whenever you're listening, to sit around with us. And until the next episode, Y'all take care out there.
And we always love to remind you to not forget your pillow.
Pillow.
I'm Mark McCrae, the author of The Best Saturdays of Our Lives. And if you're not listening to our podcast, then you're missing out on amazing interviews with
Larry Houston,
Tom Tatawanovich,
Keone Young,
Michael Swanigan,
Ned Hastings,
Bill Gollier,
Dan Gilvezan,
Rob Lamb,
and so many others.
Kick back and let Dan Klink and I peel back the curtain on the animation industry.
The Best Saturdays of Our Lives podcast can be found on the ESO Network and all podcasting platforms.
The Blurred Nerds podcast is sponsored by Sweatpants and Coffee, home of the Real Anxiety Blob. Find them on the web at www.sweatpantsandcoffee.com.
You've been listening to the Blurred Nerds podcast, a member of the ESO Network. Join in on the nerd fun by following the Blurred Nerds on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our sister channel, GVTV, on YouTube at Geek Ventures Television. Have comments or show ideas? Want to hear more? Subscribe today, join us on our social media channels, or send us an email to theblurrednerds@gmail.com.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.